Welcome to Nourishing the Mother, an inspired conversation space between Bridget Wood and Julie Tenner on the journey of motherhood through the common thread of parenting, relationship, and sexuality as a path to consciousness.
We keep our conversations honest, our experiences real, and our philosophies exploratory. We believe that in order to raise incredible humans, we first have to raise ourselves. We know that in order to rock the family, you've got to nourish the mother. If you are here, you care about paving a path of conscious and intentional motherhood, connected with yourself and your gifts, and also illuminating your children in theirs so we may raise more whole humans who can impact this world in a more humane way.
If you desire to integrate your learnings practically and supportively, head on over to bridgetwood.life or julietenner.love to go deeper. And for all live-streamed pre-release podcasts and all our free content, head over to our free Facebook group, Nourishing the Mother with Bridget Wood and Julie Tenner. We are Julie Tenner and Bridget Wood, and we are so grateful you're here.
Hello and welcome to Nourishing the Mother. I'm Bridget Wood.
And I'm Julie Tenner. And today's podcast is Balancing Kids' Freedoms and Family Rules.
This feels like this could be like a big conversation. Because how much is parenting family life fraught with what rules or guidelines do we want to live by? What do we want to set as a tone for the way we relate to each other, for what's important to us as a collective, and for the very natural, inevitable handing over of responsibility bit by bit to our children for their lives. And there's so many crossroads we come to as parents in this process, and I think it begins in pregnancy, you know, and it never really ends. And so we want to take the conversation this way. That's some reflection for you.
Totally. Maybe where is really wise to start, though, is just what the heck does family rules or boundaries even mean? Like, what the heck do family rules even mean? So yeah, I think it's worth maybe having a hot minute there. And I just want to just preface that conversation with, I look around me and what I can see is that lots of rules or no rules both end up places I don't want my kids to go. So it seems to be the middle path, thank you, Dharma, is the way, but then what the heck is the middle path?
How do you determine what the middle path is? I mean, I think so much of us will parent the way that we were parented or really try to do something totally different if that felt very inadequate. And so if we felt like that there were lots of rules and too many rules, then we may become a bit permissive and have no rules and not a lot of structure. And conversely, if we had no structure and no rules and it was very permissive, then we may go the opposite way. And I think what you're saying is beautiful in the sense that how do we attune to the vision for our family or the goals that we have for our children and discern or kind of come up with a set of rules. And I think, I mean, rules is quite a strong word in the sense that a rule is like ideally unbreakable. A rule is not something that's generally up for negotiation, I suppose. I mean, it could be, and I think there's certain times in our children's lives where rules do become negotiated. But a rule is very different from a boundary. A boundary is more about this is how I'll accept you to treat me versus a rule being this is a solid line for, you know, this greater group of our family.
And also but also just getting really clear, like, what are rules for you? Because if you've got a funky ass relationship with what rules mean to you, your funky relationship based on your experience is going to be filtering, therefore, how you move with those and what you do with your kids, which isn't necessarily have anything to do with them. So we just want to get clear on what are rules to you. Do I have any funky stuff I need to move out of the way there? And where do rules come from? Where do your rules come from? Why are they there? Like, where are your rules from?
I think, and I mean, rules we can create proactively, like preventatively, and then sometimes we can then come into situations with our children or with our children's friends where we can see, okay, no, we need a rule here, or we need to make clear the rules that my children have grown up with now to the other children that enter this house, which I've done.
Well, and it's a complex dynamic, isn't it? Yeah, I find that complex in this house we blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think as mothers, those situations come up for us to test our values and our congruency with what it is we hold our children to or ourselves to, and how we then expect others to be in our spaces and intersect with those rules, right?
Totally. Now, you'd said some interesting things before we started this podcast, Bridget, and one of those was, are the rules family rules or are they actually child-specific rules?
And we can start off with this, I suppose, sometimes I think fantasy kind of driven idea that this is what we're going to hold everybody to and this is what needs to work for everybody and in this kind of homogenous way. But I think the more that you learn your children and how they are maybe different, you may recognize that the rules you have for one child are not the same rules that you have for another child. And there's not some arbitrary age at which something becomes available to you. I mean, this is a conversation I was having with my daughter today because she seemed to think that you got to a certain age and then you're allowed to ride your bike everywhere. And I was like, oh no, because it's really actually up to different families and you know, and their different rules, and also to different children, because not everybody at 10 has the road awareness or, you know, has the sensibility to know how to carry themselves in public and, you know, how to be responsible. And so it created a great conversation around nuance. And I think when we're creating rules or seeking to uphold our children or ourselves to rules, we need to consider nuance when we're setting them and also holding people to them.
Yeah, totally. And even just interesting, is this actually a family rule or is this a child-specific rule, and therefore are there different rules that actually float around as this cohesive family set of values or rules?
Yeah,
I think it's incredibly interesting. Then another point you raised was, are the rules realistic and developmentally centric?
So sometimes the rules that we set for our family, and you'll find this perhaps if you and your partner have quite different kind of rules and you're in this little bit of a tussle around what you want the rules to be. Maybe your partner had quite rigid rules around dinner time and wants to continue those, and you're a bit more maybe aware of child development and the child's capacity to sit still for half an hour. So you kind of in this tricky situation where it may be a rule and it may be something that you have grown up with yourself, but it may not also be realistic and appropriate and could be causing a whole lot of angst because it's maybe not developmentally possible for your child to adhere to that rule. So that's an important one to consider.
Is this a developmentally respectful rule?
Yeah.
As an age appropriate, they have the mental, emotional, and physical skills to be able to do this.
Yes. And this is, again, I think it circles back to your point, or the point we were discussing about, are these rules for the whole family or rules for every child? Because one child may well be able to sit still
and have dinner. Yeah.
And another really may not be able to.
Totally.
And if we have these really rigid rules that we try to hold our kids to, often we just create pain for everybody because they're not realistic or achievable. The rules need to be achievable so that also we feel like we're not constantly in a battle.
Not a jailer,
And that our child feels like they can meet our expectations and feel part of, feel, you know, that warmth of connection, that sense of cohesiveness that the rules can sometimes really provide children.
Totally. And the last point we wanted to make on rules is, can the rules that you have as a family unit, can you as the lead parent, as the leader of this family unit, as the parent group, can you consistently uphold them? Because consistency is key. All boundaries and all rules are fair when they are able to be upheld consistently, assuming that we have all of the other things we've just talked about. But consistency is key. Not, I can hold them when I'm in a really great space and then my mental load or my work or whatever drops off and then the rule drops off. And now it's back on and now it's off and now it's back on and now it's off and now it's back on and now it's changed. And now it's off and now I've, and now there's all this anxiety and anxious attachment and tension. And now that will develop this kind of emotional kind of firecracker of like, there's a rule. I'm instantly in that anxiety driven space as a child. So now all rules are hard.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a really big one. I think sometimes too, if we're not aware of it, we can be looking for the rule to help ourselves feel safe. And so we only really pull up like those boundaries around that rule, or we kind of start to get that forcefulness when we're feeling stressed, and we'll be more restrictive with our children to those rules versus other times where we, you know, either don't have the presence to uphold them and so things get lax. And that can be really challenging for a child to navigate, because instead of spending their time, which is ideally what childhood's about, figuring out who they are, they spend a whole lot of energy trying to figure out you as the parent. And that's hard for a kid. So sometimes it's if you're on that side of the fence of like all the rules, because the rules help you feel safe and the rules because that's what how you grew up or that's what your partner said needs to happen, but you feel like you're creating this tightrope walk for your child of anxiety or even yourself, then maybe it's time to really reassess them around what's developmentally appropriate here, and also, can I actually uphold it?
Totally. Because
it's just figure out, you know, clearly we can have rules that like almost like a company mission statement that hangs on a wall that no one really lives by, and then the well, you know, the actual person, parents' values and what their rules are, which depending on the parent's mood can ebb and flow and change.
It's so true. You don't want your family rules to end up as the arbitrary mission statement. Yeah, it's so true.
So true. I mean, I think sometimes it's like choose your rules carefully and mindfully.
Yeah, totally.
Because they're much more likely to be adhered to. Because your children will know really clearly where you stand.
Yeah. Totally.
And I can tell you with a tween now, some of those rules feel really safe for him.
Mm.
And that I've heard him come and ask me knowing I'm going to say no and sensing he really wants me to say no, like to what his friends asked.
Mm.
And that clear communication and him knowing I uphold that helps him really know where he stands, which I think our kids need.
Mm. Well, it really helps them, you know, set course for their own moral or value compass, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I really like that. So let's talk about in this podcast, we have four places that we would like to take you. So part number one is we would like you to remember the burnt pancake situation. Now, we talked about this in a recent podcast. So go back to that podcast if you need a refresher on this.
Episode 442, which is called I'm Feeling Wobbly in This Age and Stage of My Child's Development. We detail all the characteristics that come up with the burnt pancake phenomenon. So you can have a listen to that. And yeah,
it might actually make you feel better here. But the metaphor here is the whole idea that whenever we're balancing kids' freedom and family rules, is that's only ever going to come into conflict when our children say, enough of this, I want something different or more, right? So it's only ever going to be a conflict when it's a conflict. It's only ever going to be a problem when it's a problem.
Yes.
Which will mean our children are leading us there. And often when we've got a set of rules that keep our nervous system feeling really safe, and then our child challenges those rules, they're challenging our nervous system safety, which often will reflect in us the burnt pancake situation, which is the first time we approach it, we burn it. We don't do it very well. So our nervous system goes into its fight or flight, hold on to this situation, I'm being attacked, regressive mode. Yeah. So we just want to preface this conversation with it is okay to acknowledge that the first time you meet anything, you're probably not going to nail it.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of wasting all of your energy and mental load replaying it and berating yourself and just pummeling yourself black and blue, is just to take a minute and go, okay, now I remember the burnt pancake situation. Okay, I burnt the first pancake. Doesn't mean the rest of them aren't going to be amazing. Mm. Now let me do a process to get clear. I won't burn the future pancakes, but probably the first time you will.
Yeah, and this doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to completely screw up your first child. It's more like the first time you encounter this situation with that child, it's not always going to go as smooth as you hope it will, yes. But stay with it and stay in really open communication with yourself, like in this conversation yes. with yourself, the rules, and also with your child. Like, be honest about how it's feeling a bit challenging for you to decide where you stand here and to figure this out. Because they can feel that even if you haven't told them. So it's better to be authentic and help, you know, keep them on the journey with you.
Yeah, totally. And how beautiful to bring that level of self-compassion that they will one day role model for themselves. Yeah. Yeah. As opposed to, you know, fight against it and defend just to hold on to my sense of ego or self or preservation. Or collapsing into shame spirals and I'm self-minimizing and I'm worse than and now I've got a fawn or whatever the situation is just being able to hold yourself in it and go, wow, shit, that didn't go well. Okay, how am I moving through this and forwards? I just think that's such a wonderful life skill.
Absolutely.
This podcast is brought to you by what we have going on in the world. Over at julietenner.love/abundance, you can get in free for Embrace Abundance, the Art of Receiving and Trusting Money, a completely free audio mini series for women who want to change their relationship with money. There's 4 audios and a bonus money attracting binaural MP3 download. So let's change the way you think and believe about money, and let's get your 2024 off to a great start. julietenner.love/abundance. And Bridgie, what have you got going on in the world?
Well, if 2024 is the year you're committed to creating more capacity and joy in your mothering, then the Reimagining Motherhood Mentorship is for you. It's 3 months together with me for an intimate group of women dedicated to both conscious parenting and their own fulfillment and expression, rather than feeling weighed down by motherhood. Find out more about the program and the early bird offer at bridgetwood.life.
So, number one, please have the mindset of the burnt pancake situation. It's cool. No worries. Work it out. Go again. Which leads us to point number two, the self-check-in.
Yes, the self-check-in is really a series of questions that you need to ask yourself around what this is. So what is this situation, or this, you know, quest for freedom, or this need for a rule? What's it bringing up for me? Because the first time you're meeting this, it's going to bring something up for you. And so what is it, and where does my belief, my inherent belief I've got about it, come from? And then thirdly, asking yourself, are there any other possibilities? Mm. Could I see this a different way? Is there a part of me that might be willing to do this? You know, an example of this might be sleepovers. So my daughter was invited to a sleepover in grad prep. It was an absolute no for me. But I, you know, checked in with, you know, why that was and where that belief came from, and I considered against other possibilities, and I thought the cost benefit of that didn't stack up for me, and I was clear with my daughter around my no, and that was that. Mm-hmm. You can also bring in the other perspectives of people who you really value and trust. So sometimes you might like to just notice in your own questioning who you could ask and get insight from, who is perhaps a little bit further on the parenting path than you and has maybe encountered this before, so that they can share with you their perspective or their experience, and you can draw from that what's relevant and meaningful for you in your decision-making.
Mm. I just think it's wholly wise to just offer yourself self-check, because we're all running a set of beliefs and therefore rules that we make from those based on our own personal lived experience, which will be vastly different to all of the other lived experiences of the humans that are around you.
Yeah.
So we have to remember, when we're questioning what are rules for us, what are rules for our family, like, where am I sitting with this? It's worth just going, on that, where has it come from? Let me see what other perspectives are here. Are there other ways that people see this based on their lived experiences, mm-hmm. which might be actually more in alignment for my children than my lived experience?
Yeah, and this is where you've really got to consider, because we'll often put in place rules and be quite firm in things that are, you know, where are in alignment with our values, but also we won't allow necessarily the shift in thinking towards something outside our values unless it's made clear enough to us that it is our child's values and they're different to us, and we need to then stretch and seek out the person to help us see that, because we won't see that because we're naturally not attuned to it. And if your child has a set of values around horses and you couldn't care less about horses, you're not generally seeking out experiences related to that unless you're really dedicated to the support and nurturing of those values. And so getting the insights and the perspectives of the people who could be those supports for your child if it's not you is really important in helping you frame how you meet their desires, essentially.
Yeah, and I think also, how do you want to move forwards? Because often what we're trying to create for our kids is not the experience that we've personally had, which means it's a little bit of unknown territory. Mm. So often I think being informed by the lived experiences of those around you for whom have more the experience you want to create for your child is really useful, because you haven't walked this path before. Yeah. But I can see they've walked a really successful path in this. How do they see this? So if I take this with my kids' room, so they were all sharing, and then I retell this story of, you know, trauma and excavation and all the things, and I am not even joking, 100% of the time, any of my friends who I've told this story to, and I'm like dysregulated as fuck, and, you know, and we told them we were getting a pool and they cried and got angry and this whole thing happened. Because they wanted their own rooms. And everybody goes, oh, yeah, I can see that. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? What can you see? What do you mean that makes sense? They wanted their own space. What do you mean that makes sense? They needed their own space, because it was not part of my value system or my lived experience or my trauma.
No part of me that could conceive that that could be higher value than something like a pool, or, you know, be such a high value that they would be so upset about not having it.
Yeah. Whereas when I open up to, and you do have to discern the people that you reveal the more vulnerable parts of yourself and your story to, absolutely take your discernment with you. But when I'm telling this story in a way that is inviting in their experience, is inviting in opinions, not just telling the story so you can reflect me and hear me. No. Wanting reflections from them, right? I'm careful in who I choose. Do they have an aligned value system? Do they care about kids and parenting and their development as much as I do? Do I think they're a pretty level-headed, fantastic person in the world? Yeah. Do I think they're compassionate and can deliver me the truth? Yeah. Now, for any of us, we're only ever going to have that many people we can count on our hand, probably. But you tell those people the thing, you invite them in for their opinion. How do you see this? How do you see this situation? What's your lived experience of this? And what will happen is you'll end up with a handful of different lived experiences, which I find vastly helpful to then be able to go, right, okay, so here's the barometer, right? Here's the bell curve. Now, where do I want to sit on that bell curve?
I did this with my daughter with getting her ears pierced, because I just had this arbitrary age in my head that had come from my mother. And it was when my son had, he'd finally got his ear pierced, and I'd had to move through all my stuff around that for whatever reason. And it was like, you know, my cousin's wife who I was talking to about it. And it was just the right person at the right time to offer a different perspective that helped me just loosen my rigidity around it and even question why I had this rule in the first place. Which is, it can be just so life-giving. It can be just like someone just shows you a different way. You don't have to choose it, but it's enough. It's interesting enough for it to change the way the rule that's currently driving you exists in your mind.
Yeah, I just think it's so helpful. So, yeah, the self-questions are really helpful. What is this bringing up for me? Where does it come from? Do I really, now I'm looking at it, do I think it's true? Because sometimes we can be running something, but until we look at it, we don't realize, we're like, oh no, I don't actually believe that. Because it's just the subconscious program running on autopilot. Yeah. Are there any other possibilities? That's when you invite someone else in. What are all the lived experiences? How do other people that I value and love see this? Cool. Cool. Can I borrow some of those mindsets or beliefs or way of seeing the world? Can I try them on a little bit and see? What does it feel like to be them or to have had this lived experience and see the world in this way? Because then it helps you decide how you want to move forwards. And I wouldn't say you're ready to decide how you're moving forwards and make a rule until you've done that self-excavation.
Yeah.
So when you then know, how do I want to move forwards, then the self-question becomes, what are you willing to negotiate on and what is an absolute line for you? And I always think this is enormously fascinating. I was having a conversation with a dad. I really enjoy this dad. He's a basketball dad. He's also the CEO, the GM of Crayola. So we all love Crayola, right? All of their products. So he's a really interesting man to talk to. And I happened to be waiting at the airport while we were waiting for our sons to come back from the US. So we're chatting. And he was talking about how much he has to travel and how he sits in these negotiation boardrooms and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he was just saying the supermarkets are just the worst, you know, because they just try and, you know, screw you just a little bit more each time, you know. Yeah. So I was talking around that and I'm like, it's so interesting to me. Do you ever get emotionally activated? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. But I use this skill set, which is, you know, basically what we would talk about. And I'm like, it's so fascinating, right? Like, life is parenting and work and all the things.
Yes.
And he said, but what I always go in with the mindset of is, here's what I'm willing to give away and here's what I'm absolutely not. Do I want to give those things away or negotiate on them or give it more to you because that's what you want? No. But am I willing to give you this so I get that? Yeah. And then there's things I'm not.
Yeah.
And I just found it such an interesting conversation because it's exactly what we're talking about here. What are you willing to negotiate on so you receive something in return? Relationship, trust, authenticity, openness, connection, freedom within the family unit, growth.
I mean, it's really that piece of what do I need to be firm on or clear on for myself so I can hold my center? Because, of course, much like supermarkets would be very, very skilled in manipulation, our children are very, 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 when they want something, adept at knowing where all of our weak spots are, where our values are, how to talk to get what they would love. Like, our children, and which is wonderful, right? Like, this is great skills that
they know us so well. Yeah.
Know us. And so we need to do that bit of inner work to be congruent and clear with ourselves before we walk into it, so that we're not going to end up, because of our value in our children, letting them wrap us around their finger, essentially.
Yeah, by just being really clear, here's my line, here's my non-negotiable, and I'm really in touch with why. You know, just like that boardroom sales thing, I'm really in touch why I won't give up these things. I can talk to you about them. I can talk to you about the line. I don't need to be emotionally either way on that, but this is the line. And then there's this stuff that I'm like, you know, there's movement here. Let's talk about what we're giving and taking to make this feel really good both ways. And I just love that as a mindset, because a family unit is much like a boardroom.
It is.
There's all these invested interests and different parties.
You know, people are all working to get what they can get out of the family, like, yeah. And you know, how to best help each other evolve, which is also what happens in a boardroom. You've got all different parts all working together to evolve the whole. Same thing.
Yeah.
And there's skills that are really transferable.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else do you do? Like, how do these sometimes difficult edges we come to with our children, or, you know, difficult conversations or tense conversations with them, become really beautiful opportunities for learning communication skills and communication styles and taking the perspective of another and considering the needs of the whole, not just the needs of the self, and, you know, all of these things that we hope our children take out into the world to use in positive ways. So none of these need be burdensome for you as a parent. And I think if we can see all of what we're suggesting here as part of not only our education process, or sorry, not only our child's education process on communication, but ours too, in meeting them, understanding ourselves better, supporting and nurturing our relationship with them. Like, there's just so much to be gained out of these steps that we're taking you through here.
Yeah, totally. Then when you've done that, we're hoping that by then you're clear and clarity will regulate your nervous system. And now you're ready to invite in perhaps the perspective of the co-parent at this point in time. Because sometimes when we're all muddied and we're up in our own stuff and we've got a bit of our own trauma or strategies playing out, we're actually still more childlike than we are adult-like, in which case it's generally not going to be a very constructive situation when you invite a partner into something you care a lot about, like parenting mm-hmm. and how you move forwards. Choose yep. your time more wisely.
Yeah, because it could just end up pushing you over the edge, or, you know, not being yeah. a fulfilling outcome.
Right. So do your shit first, then get the perspective of the co-parent. How do they see this? What is their lived experience? How do they want to move forwards? Because this becomes part of the complexity of the negotiations, no different to the boardroom table. No one person dominates that, because there's invested parties everywhere, but we have to work together to find what is going to help us move forwards with contract that we're all happy to sign.
Yeah.
Same thing. And then you're ready to invite your kids into the negotiation or the discussion. Because, Bridgie, it's not always a negotiation, is it?
It's not. I mean, sometimes, and I think particularly depending on ages, the younger it is, the more it's a discussion. And the older they are, the often more of it's a negotiation, because the older they are, the more, you know, like, you are really handing over responsibility to them. And so discussion looks like often what's happening with the younger child when they feel put out that they can't do what the older child's doing. Very often it's not a negotiation with them. They get to do the things the older child's doing when the time is appropriate for them. Mm. And so that's a beautiful discussion about waiting and all of that. Negotiation comes in more when you're hitting different ages and stages, but I would say probably from the tween ages onwards often.
Mm.
When you're having those complex conversations around friends and sleepovers and phones and late nights and
parties and sex and drugs and alcohol and driving.
I'm not there yet, but all that really in the teen stuff.
Yeah. It's at the time where you are your biggest responsibility, and I think the defining factor in how you move forwards in your parenting is how you're letting go. Mm. Because up until that point, you've held the cards, you've got the reins, and then there's a point at which you don't.
Mm.
And you just lose cards as it goes along.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a better metaphor there, but
how would you say,
like it or not, that's what's happening, right? So you get to choose whether it's brutal or beautiful.
I'm interested in your perspective, being at that higher end of the parenting years.
Mm.
How you find mothers' own identity can be entangled with what their teens are.
Oh, it's messy as fuck. It's like matrescence and learning how to be a mother and associate that identity. It's like that, only you're on the opposite way. It's like the reverse matrescence. And you've got to find a way to see them beyond you.
Yeah. And so I can see that as being really filled with some grief.
Yeah. Look, I think it can be, yeah.
Or but there's still trouble, like, the degree to yes. which you're invested
yes,
in your
exactly.
own, your child is the degree to which you're going to struggle with your own differentiation.
Yes. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. But, I mean, as you and I have said for years and years and years on this podcast, and I'm sure a million different paths all lead to the one, is just you have to find you.
Mm.
Not just you as mother, but you as lover, you as woman, you as a soul-filled work in the world, you as friend, You know, like you have to find the multifacets of you, not the singular facet of you.
Yeah.
Because one day the singular facet will be shattered.
Yeah.
It will be. You know, perhaps in one foul swoop, which I've seen happen, and perhaps in incremental chipping, maybe. But you've also got to remember that the whole purpose of parenting was not so you could hold on to them, it was so you could let them go. But if you don't remember that, I mean, it's going to be really hard.
Do you see other mothers, you know, with kids who are turning 18 or like near that age who struggle with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think I spoke about in the Neurodivergent podcast, my friend who invested the whole of herself and hasn't worked because she's been so invested in her children, and now he's about to turn 18 and she loses all financial funding, all child support. She's a single mother and she has no work or other identity of self in the world. What do you do? Brutal. The whole, you know, empty nest situation, brutal. I mean, I've seen so many variations of it in so many ways, and certainly in split families, a lot of playing each parent off of the other.
That's really hard. Because I can certainly imagine, you know, what could happen in, you know, with you know, unexpected separations, right? And the shock of that cracking of identity is another big one.
Yeah, and just such a delicate mix of, well, if you don't do what I want, I won't see you, I'll shut you out of my life. Do you lean in? Do you lean back? Do you like it? It is really complex. I'm not saying it's not complex, but as I have also said many times, if you have relationship, you're going to be fine. But if you have not invested in your relationship beyond ego, so remember I said in one of those podcasts, like, what is it to die for love? Like, what is it? Because the only part that's dying is your ego. Instead of trying to preserve some facet of the self, what is it to roll over and be broken open for love?
I do think we get many invitations to play with what our ego attachment is to mothering when we, you know, even as toddlers, when our toddler, like, you know, becomes the embarrassment of the shopping center, or, you know, and we try to control that because of how it reflects us. We get actually many, 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 many opportunities to work.
Right. This is why I'm saying it's complex, and also it isn't, because, you know, parenting the 17-year-old is no different to parenting the 3-year-old in many ways. Like, I can't tell you how many times in the last, I don't know, 8 weeks I've gone, it's like he doesn't have a brain. I do not understand. Where has it gone? You know, like,
exit of the building.
Yeah, it's gone. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I don't know how we got onto this conversation, but inviting them into the negotiation and what are you willing to let go of is still what's more important to you. Seeing them, having relationship with them, having a touch point on their lives, or the rule.
And this was the real shift for you in our conversation about the shifting
rooms. Yeah, it was the pivotal string. Yeah, it was pivotal because I was still really unsure about it. I was still like, this still feels like a real value for me, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, absolutely. It was you, Bridget, going, what's the bigger picture here? Is it that, you know, yeah, you stick to that, which you can do. And Heath spends all of his time out of the house, or is your value that you wanted him and his friends here? In which case, how do you create that? Like, where's the bigger value? And I was like, well, it's a no brainer. So when I was more in touch with the bigger value, the self that wanted to hang on to the pieces, the shit, the like has to be this way, this room, this, like, you have to deal, who cares, whatever, was all ego.
This is where quality questions are so powerful for cutting through those egoic kind of identities that are the things that are holding on, not actually our true self.
Because yeah, your it wasn't the true self.
Like, your true self was like, oh, yeah. Course,
no brainer.
But it's those other parts. It's exactly. For all of us.
Yes, exactly. So I just think it's such a complex, I mean, it's so fun. Look, the teenagers are also really, really fun and really lovely. I really wholeheartedly say that. I really, really enjoy teens. They're beautiful. And also, they're just as nervous system dysregulating, and the way in which you had to learn how to be a mother, now you have to learn how to not be one. And, you know, like, it's the stakes are higher because they can leave. They can leave you, they can leave the house, they can leave the room or not.
And also, too, the experiences that they have with you in those teen years are much more fresh in their mind for, therefore, how they relate to you when they've left.
For the rest of their lives. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And the stakes are honestly just higher, like it is life or death stakes. Whereas when they were younger, it wasn't. Not really. Now it is. I leave and the decision I make next can impact whether I'm here or not here.
God, it's terrifying.
Well, it's terrifying, but at the same time, I think the level of intensity and the remembrance of that for me is to remember that ultimately death is on the line here. So where's the bigger value? Do I need to hold on to this thing, or can I let it go for the sake of love and connection or whatever it is right now, keeping you here, having you feel safe and welcome and loved and respected, right? Teens really need to feel respected. And you overriding their needs, wants, desires, and words with your own does not feel respectful.
Yeah.
So you're learning relationship all over again.
With people with a much more vast vocabulary than a 2-year-old.
Yeah. So let's just go over this again, because balancing kids' freedom and family rules is, like we've said, nuanced and complex. But the first step has to be, what are rules to me? And what's maybe even the first questions we should be asking is, like we've talked about here, what's the bigger vision, the rule or a particular outcome for your family or your relationship or your child? Like, what's the biggest vision? That everyone eats at the dinner table, or that we're connected and we have flexibility around where your nervous system is at? I don't know, relationship. So maybe that's a great place for you to start. Hold self-compassion with the burnt pancake. Remember, the first time you meet anything, you're probably not going to do it well. That's okay. Because what you're going to do is the self-check-in, which was part number two. You're going to see if you can borrow some other perspectives, and then you're going to get really clear. When you're clear and more regulated, you'll invite the co-parent opinion in, and you'll work out as a family unit or as the lead parents, the people steering the ship, what's really important to you here, how are we moving forwards? And then you're ready to have those conversations with your kids. So, Bridgie, how do we do this work with you?
Yes, in the Reimagining Motherhood Mentorship, which is a 3-month program with me, with one-to-one sessions, with group guidance, coursework, you name it. And it is a really beautiful container for you to totally transform how you relate to yourself in motherhood, and also how you use that beautiful opportunity to reconnect to you, to reconnect with your children and feel much more fulfilled and alive in your mothering journey. So check out that at bridgetwood.life. And you, Jules?
Is the completely free downloadable audio series Embrace Abundance, the Art of Receiving and Trusting Money. So that is for you if you are ready to change your relationship, your mindset, and your energy around money. And it's completely free. You can download it at julietenner.love/abundance.
Remember to nourish the womb to rock the family.
And we'll see you next week when we continue to peel back the layers on your mothering journey.
Thank you so much for listening. We literally couldn't do this without you. Please share this podcast with anyone you think it would be medicine for.
If you desire to integrate your learnings practically and supportively into your life, then head on over to bridgetwood.life or julietenner.love to go deeper.
And if you feel like giving back a little to this free content, please rate us on iTunes or Facebook. All of which helps the podcast reach more mamas who need this type of tonic for the soul.